Good evening, everyone. This is Bob Trout, bringing you the news of Europe. And now the details are beginning to pour in on the reply that Chancellor Adolf Hitler sent to Premier Edouard Daladier of France this afternoon, flatly rejecting a French proposal for arbitration in the dispute with Poland.
Veteran broadcaster Robert Trout. He died early this morning. He was 91 years old.
And so, as another dawn breaks over Europe, the peoples of the various nations of the continent seem to be plunged into the deepest despondency that has prevailed since the beginning of this German-Polish dispute over Danzig. From practically all the foreign capitals come gloomy reports, dispatches indicating that the man in the street, at least, is all but resigned to the inevitability of a general war.
Bob Trout was our last link to the origin of broadcast news. His calm, reassuring voice was heard on the nation's airwaves for 69 years. He began on radio in March of 1931. His final broadcast on this program was 2 weeks ago. Trout started in the business on a local station here in Washington, D.C. He served as the station handyman. When the announcer failed to show up one day, he was put to work on the air. At the time, he assumed it would be another temporary job, replacing driving cabs and running errands. But when station WJSV became part of a new nationwide network, Robert Trout was ready. CBS Radio remained his home for most of his life.
Minute by minute, the swiftly moving events give a darker picture of the scene abroad on this fateful day of September 1st. As announced by Chancellor Hitler to the Reichstag some 3.5 hours ago, a speech carried on this network, Germany's army has invaded Poland all along the German-Polish frontier. In France, where a general mobilization is bringing 6 million men into the field, a request has been received from Poland to come to her aid. Poland
has now. World War II was the first war to be covered on the radio, and at the center was the anchor, Robert Trout. Out in the field was the historic reporting team built by Edward R. Murrow, and in a New York studio, Robert Trout had to quickly absorb the news, then repeat it back into a microphone. A lot of his work was off the cuff, ad-libbing from notes or comments whispered to him through headphones. In the midst of this flurry of activity, Robert Trout projected clarity and precision.
That is the news of Europe at the moment, but the Columbia Network is remaining on all night, open all night, to bring you the news of Europe as it occurs.
Later, Robert Trout would appear on television, and he would change networks several times. But for a generation of Americans, his voice is associated with some of the most important news of the past century. It was from Trout that America first heard the phrase fireside chat. He used it to describe the radio talks that President Franklin Roosevelt gave to the nation from the White House. Years later, Trout described the scene at that first chat.
The new president went on the air to tell how he was reopening the nation's closed banks. "My friends," he began, and sounded as if he meant it, as if every listener was a friend. We, the professional broadcasters at the scene, would not know until later that the listeners thought so too, thought that maybe there might be hope after all.
The 24-year-old professional who introduced the President of the United States for those fireside chats grew up not far from the White House. Before he changed his name, he was Robert Albert Blondheim, born October 15, 1909. His father operated a shoe store about 2 blocks from the studio where I'm sitting now. As a child, Robert was exposed to the grand events of this city.
I watched my first presidential inauguration as a restless 8-year-old in March 1917, sitting with my parents in a grandstand at 15th and F Streets. The president was Woodrow Wilson, who had actually been sworn in privately the day before, Sunday. But since no president wants to compete with the church, he restaged a public ceremony the next day. As the president passed by in his horse-drawn carriage, though, my thoughts were on Affleck's drugstore just behind me, where the warmth of a hot chocolate promised relief from the winter winds of Washington. As you probably have surmised, I don't remember a word Wilson said that day.
Robert Trout would go on to witness every presidential inauguration for the rest of the 20th century, most of them as a radio anchor. Robert Trout had been out of broadcasting for many years when a Chicago radio producer got him interested in sharing stories and observations with NPR listeners. 4 years ago, John McDonough came to us with the idea of having Trout share the lessons of a lifetime in broadcasting on All Things Considered. Here is one. He's talking about June 1944, a few days before the real D-Day.
The London to New York AP printers at CBS suddenly sprang to life with the sound of five bells and began clattering. Rushing through the door to CBS Studio 9, I broke in on Ted Husing from Belmont Racetrack and was on the air within a minute, reading the news with calm reserve.
This is Bob Trout speaking from Columbia's news headquarters in New York. At precisely 39 minutes past 4 o'clock Eastern wartime, the Associated Press sent a flash. Here's the entire bulletin. London, June 3rd. General Eisenhower's headquarters announced tonight that Allied forces had landed in France. We are pressing for a further clarification. This bulletin has come to you from CBS World News. We now resume our scheduled program.
That bulletin, Robert Trout told us, was the result of someone testing a teletype machine in a London office.
At 5 o'clock, I went on the air again. A story was circulated
a few minutes ago that Allied troops had landed in France. That report appears now to have been based on erroneous information. Here is what has happened. At 39 minutes past 4 o'clock Eastern wartime, the Associated Press sent a flash. It said merely, Eisenhower's headquarters announced Allied landings, France. That's the entire flash. Then about 2 minutes after that, at 4:41 Eastern wartime, the AP sent another flash. This one said, an urgent message from London has killed the first flash, saying that Eisenhower had landed. There is no immediate explanation, but we are trying urgently for clarification.
3 days later, the real D-Day would come, and Robert Trout would anchor the coverage. Exactly 1 year ago, Bob Trout came down from his home in New York City to pay his one and only visit to NPR. He was stooped and frail, but he remained blessed with an extraordinary memory and clarity of mind. In that way, you don't get much luckier than Bob Trout. Although widowed, with no children, he lived not only long, but well. He traveled widely, he kept homes in both Madrid and New York, and he was able to continue working at the end of his life, sharing his memories with a new radio audience in his last years.
Maybe this is why long life has been such a special gift to this journalist. I can enjoy the satisfaction of closure. I have lived long enough to appreciate the full qualities of the men I covered, long enough to understand what the stories really meant, and ultimately, how they all turned out. For National Public Radio, this is Robert Trout in New York.
Robert Trout, a broadcaster for nearly 70 years, he died this morning at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City. He was 91.